So I've been in a sacred place this last week. It's called Esalen Institute in Big Sur. Oh, some of you know about it. Yeah, and I have been privileged with being there at a very sacred time. So for those of you who don't know, Esalen Institute is a retreat center. It's a place of rejuvenation, a place of nurturance. It's a place where a lot of new ideas and practices and divine and human potential and development and realization of human potential have happened over many years. And there are people in leadership there now, and a descendant of the founders who were really feeling this sort of mix of what they had to offer and this gnawing feeling, this deep wound of the Esalen people whose land that once was, who were, of course, moved to missions and relocated. It's a very sacred place because it's a land where three waters converge. It's the ocean, a river, and healing mineral baths. There's a natural spring there of healing mineral baths. So you can imagine how sacred this place was to the Esalen people, still is, and to the people who now walk that land. And so these folks that, especially this one workshop leader that I was a part of, who's also Moray from New Zealand, and it was in his heart and several others' heart to find a way to reconcile with the Esalen people. And it's been years in the making, and there's been things over many years, but especially in these last several years, there's been really concerted effort for reconciliation. So on Sunday last week, there was a land acknowledgement ceremony with lots of people from the Esalen tribe and lots of others, including the son of the founder of the Esalen Institute, who presented the tribal elders with pelican wings that he found on the land and cleaned himself. And the Esalen tribal elder who co-led the workshop I was in said the pelican represents grief. So then there was ceremony and there was celebration and there was food and music, and that was a large but private affair, and then Monday started our workshop. And I was thinking about how this idea, this question lived in the souls of the people that are at the Institute now. You know, when you have a gift to give and you know you have this beautiful place and you're giving your gift and you're doing your work, but there's sometimes that gnawing feeling that something isn't quite right, that there is a deep wound here that needs addressing, that needs healing, that needs to be called forth. And that's what was happening. It's very much like what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount when he said, if you are offering your gift at the altar and remember somebody who has something against you, go and be reconciled first before you give your gift. That if there's an energy there, if there's something that's stopping us and there's some knowing for ourselves that this is not free and clear. In fact, I can't give any of my gifts free and clear until I turn around and reconcile that which is in the past that feels like it's still sort of dragging along with me. You know that feeling? Or heavy on my shoulders, or heavy on my heart. And so imagine how difficult this process must have been. And it still is, still ongoing, right? How I'm sure there was conflict along the way and clash of different ways of doing things and seeing things, a very sensitive and delicate process. But there was courage in it and a willingness to bridge those divides, to begin to move in that direction toward healing. I feel so deeply gratitude for the opportunity to be a part of that energy this week, this co-led workshop, and that process and that sharing that happened as a result of this. One of the men in the workshop with me said, as the children came down, that they have a school there too, preschool, and the children came into our workshop so that they could explore the medicine wheel and they could dance with us. And one of the men said, you know, after the children left, I realized when I see children, I see them as innocent and cute and adorable, and I just get open, and I'm like, oh, he's so sweet. He goes, why can't I see other adults that way? And so he practiced during the rest of our session seeing the other adult participants like he sees children, pure and innocent and open and cute. What a great practice. So I encourage us to do that. Maybe even just look around right now and see the children, see the innocence, the openness, the cuteness. We're just a bunch of kindergartners in here, you know? It's the truth, isn't it? There is purity here. There is innocence. There is joy. There's playfulness now. I feel a more playful energy. Yeah, like we go right in. We know how to do this. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be children of God." Yeah. So let's, you know, blessed are those who lay down their judgments and their defenses. They shall be free. And that's really what this man in the workshop was saying. When he said it, I could see the joy and feel the peace as he expressed what this exercise that he had chosen to do meant to him. Has anybody ever had a long-standing conflict with somebody and you don't even remember why it started? There's a lot of that going on in our world, where even if you do remember, you might still be holding some kind of long-standing grudge or some issue with someone, or they against you, or both, you know. And instead of, you know, worrying about figuring out what the cause was if you have since forgotten, how about instead we look for the good? We just look for the good in that person, in the situation, in ourselves, in our interactions, in the time lost, in the time won back together perhaps, in the time we had. Whatever it may be, looking for the good. And then when we find it, we can name it and call it forth. This is a gratitude practice, isn't it? When we find the good and we call it forth and we name it, gratitude follows. The feeling of gratitude arises in us generally when we come into contact with goodness, with the essence of goodness, with a memory, something sweet. So Carl and Sam were two guys that had this long-standing kind of rift, and they couldn't even remember how it started. And there was a deacon in their spiritual community that just felt really sad about this, and so he prayed that God would help him be a peacemaker between Carl and Sam. And so he started out by visiting Carl. This isn't this Carl, necessarily. I don't know. Maybe Carl knows a Sam. Who knows? So when he went to Carl, he said, "Hey, Carl, what do you think of Sam?" And Carl said, "Oh, he's the sorriest guy in town." And he said, the deacon says, "Well, don't you think, though, he's a hardworking guy?" Carl said, "Well, no one can deny that. I've actually never seen anyone who works harder than Sam." So then the deacon went and visited Sam. And he said, "Do you know what Carl said about you?" And of course, Sam immediately said, "No, but I can't imagine all the lies he must have told you." And the deacon says, "Well, it might surprise you, but he said you're the hardest working guy he knows." "What?" Sam was stunned. "What do you think of Carl?" said the deacon. "Well, it's no secret. I want nothing to do with that guy," said Sam. "Well, you have to admit, though, he's an honest businessman." "Oh, well, I'll give you that. He is really trustworthy when it comes to business." So next time the deacon saw Carl, you know what happened, right? You know what Sam said about you? He said that you are a really trustworthy businessman, an honest guy. Carl smiled. Soon the peacemaking deacon was delighted to see Carl and Sam kind of nodding at each other as they passed. Seemed a little bit friendly. And then he saw them shake hands on a future Sunday. And then over time, they started talking to each other and then visiting each other's homes, and now they're best friends. Now, had Carl and Sam addressed their conflict sooner, they could have had all these years of shared relationship and friendship. It's great that they reconciled now, but Jesus tells us, settle matters quickly with your adversary before it gets turned over to the judge and you become imprisoned. That's a paraphrase, but it's a little longer verse than that. But you know how that works for us, right? If we notice the adversarial thoughts and feelings arising in us, if we turn them over quickly, if we settle matters quickly, then it won't go to the point of the court and the judge, the inner critic, and the imprisonment, or the criticism and the judgment of the others around us, and the imprisonment that creates, the isolation that creates, the separation consciousness that grows out of that. So as peacemakers, we're in the business of freeing one another and ourselves, not imprisoning, not building walls. But you can notice as you become more and more conscious and deliberate with your peacemaking, you'll notice as you start to put up a brick and then another brick and then another brick, and you pretty soon will be kicking those bricks down faster than you can build them. And eventually, with deliberate time and practice, there will be no bricks at all. No wall to build, no need for it, because you will be centered in the I am of any storm. Centered in spirit, we can do and be all the things that we dream about, that we talk about, that we envision, that we mission, that we work together to embody these core values of spirituality, these attributes. Gary Simmons, the author of our book that we've been using throughout this series, and today is the culmination of our series, he talks about a practice of reconciliation that was developed after he had a profound spiritual experience. He actually pinched his fingers in the garage door, and he started to have what many call a near-death experience, even though he wasn't dying. He just had this experience of all this reconciliation work that needed to happen. All these people he needed to ask for forgiveness or to forgive came flooding through his mind in just a few minutes' time. And it brought him, when he came to and became more consciously aware, to this idea that he needed to get busy making peace and reconciling with others. And so what he decided to do was treat it like it was a near-death experience and treat it as if today was the last day on earth for him, and that evening that he had an opportunity to review all in that one day that was like a lifetime, all the ways he had left somebody out of his heart. And that he would make a list of all those people and be granted one more day, the next day, to reconcile. And so every day he did this, he guided a meditation for himself. He opened himself to who he needed to put on the list. He made his list. And he also vowed that before he took on any personal agenda items in his day, he would reach out and contact those people to reconcile whatever had happened the day before. So over time, he noticed a lot of changes. At first, the practice was hard and it was awkward, as it sometimes is when we start to step toward what feels conflictual, right? And be vulnerable and open our hearts. So that whole process can take a little courage. But he was willing. He got very serious about, this is my last day on earth. So I'm going to clean things up as best I can. So he noticed that that about a week afterwards, in the daily process, things were changing day to day, but he especially noticed in the second week that he became more aware of his ability to correct himself in the moment instead of building up the need for the list, right? He also noticed that a lot of the people he contacted, he was enhancing his relationships with them. And some of them were saying, I don't even remember what you're talking about. You know, I took no offense. You ever have those experiences? I've had people come up to me and say, I'm so sorry for blah, blah, blah. And I was like, have no recollection of any of that, but you are forgiven. Be free. So, you know, he noticed that the lists got shorter, they got easier to make, and by the third week, because he devoted himself to 3 weeks of this practice, that magical seeming 21 days, that his interactions got more and more present and mindful in the moment. And so then he said something really profound happened, that just having the thought to have right action and right relationship, the intention, just holding that corrected things before and during any particular interaction. And so before you know it, he had no list, no need for reconciliation, because he was living it, because he was standing in that place of alignment and allowing himself to trust spirit to guide him in the process. So what have you took on this practice for 21 days, day by day reconciliation? You imagined, you reviewed your day at the end of the day, and then you actually made contact with those people. Don't worry, after a while, there'll be no one to contact even. But the relationships could be stronger, and you could be more mindful and skillful in them because of a practice like this. Now, you might be thinking, well, I can do that just as long as this one thing, whatever it is, I don't have to address. Or I don't have to address that thing, like maybe that person's political view that's different than mine. Anybody have that squeamishness? There's a lot of that going around in the last many years. So Wendy and Ernie first met at Wheaton College in Illinois, and they became fast friends. They were political science majors, both of them. They were city kids, and they just spent all their time together. And in the 30 years since they graduated, they've been contacting some by phone and social media and even having some in-person visits over the years. And Wendy noticed something that just before the 2020 election, that Ernie's social media posts, in her words, got more radical. And she privately chatted with him about it and shared like what she was seeing, what she was believing and viewing, and he stopped responding. Now, her heart was just nearly broken because they had had such a close friendship. And so she prayed, what could she do to reach out and to reconnect with Ernie? And she was guided to this card that had a picture of a frazzled little girl on the front. And in one hand, she's got a coffee cup, and under her arm, she's got a laptop. And on the cover, it says, first coffee. And in the second, and in the inside, it says, second, try to make peace in the world. And then Wendy wrote in the card to Ernie about how they both love their families, but they just had different ideas about how their families could best be supported in the world going forward. And she told him she loved him, and she valued their friendship, and she hoped they would stay in touch. So a few days later, Ernie responded. He said, Wendy, thank you. I received your lovely card, and it reminded me of the affinity I have for you. I was beginning to think the political divide between us was too big for our friendship to survive. Anybody been there? Yeah, some of us right now. Yeah. He said, that should never occur. Thank you so much for reminding me with your wisdom and your thoughtfulness and reaching out in this way to make that point. I appreciate and love you more for it. And I promise to move forward with an open mind. On election night, let's each raise a toast to the future and out of respect for our long-standing friendship. Love, Ernie. Gary says, a peacemaker stands at the center of confusion and upset and conflict without making others wrong for their views, without making others wrong for their positions. If you feel challenged by this kind of situation, don't give up. Just give over to spirit, and you will be shown a way to find the good to find the way back. Because when we stand in that place, in the I am of the storm, in the center place, we recognize that bonds with family and friends transcend political views. The heart over the head will win every time when we stand in that place of center. So you know an awakening is happening all over the world right now. Thank you, God. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? You know, it shows up in little pockets and little corners, or maybe right here in your own life and right before you. I mean, as I learned about and experienced this that was happening at Esalen, I thought, wow, this is quite the journey of courage and sensitivity on both sides to come together, and vulnerability and willingness. And it can take years to get to that place of having those conversations. What in this community might we take on as a whole that could help us move forward the dial toward peace and harmony, that could help us live into our namesake, unity? Maybe there'll be land reconciliation here with the Bay Miwok, the Ohlone, the Yukots. Maybe there'll be some kind of reparations. I don't know, we know in the collective mind and heart of our community, we know. And if we just open together to that intention that we will be shown the way, then we can rally together and make it so, whatever it may be, whatever the call may be for reconciliation, for peace, for harmony, for unity. And each of us, whether it is individual or collective, in a community, in a group that you belong to, we will be shown the way if we just ask. If we just open ourselves in prayer and ask, it will be given to us. The way will be shown. And we can get out of the way of God, remember, so that the way of God can be the way that we are stepping in, the way that we are moving forward in. Maybe this short story will help us. The Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat was a controversial figure, no doubt, over the years. And he was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1994. 20 years before that, in 1974, he brought an olive branch to the UN General Assembly. Maybe like this one, with ripening olives on it. And he said at that UN General Assembly, "Today I have come bearing an olive branch and a freedom fighter's gun. Do not let the olive branch fall from my hand." Side by side as a community, we can work together for peace if we don't let the olive branch fall from each other's hands. Turn to somebody and say, "I won't let the olive branch fall from your hand." I'm going to pass this around so you can just really feel that. Who knows what we'll do with it after this. It actually comes from an olive tree, you'll be interested to know, that was planted in commemoration of Reverend Sheila Gautreau. I think it was planted by Tyler. Yeah. And others. Yeah. So it is a part of our community's lineage. Yeah. In community, we can embrace conflict. Individually in our lives, we can embrace conflict, and that benefits the community as well. When we do it as a community, it benefits the individuals and all of our connections, all of our relations, including with the animals and the plants and everything, every breathing thing on this planet. And we can do it by centering in that I am of any storm, and knowing from there we have everything we need to move forward. Knowing from that place, that truth, that no one and nothing is against us. So let's know it as we walk forward in peace, toward peace, becoming peace, being peace, embodying peace in every way possible that we can. Practicing in all the ways that we can think of to bring forth greater peace on earth. I invite you to say this affirmation with me. I am a peacemaker. I create peace by embracing conflict. No one and nothing is against me. And so it is.